The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading selections from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The April issue of Our State magazine features articles all about revolutionary NC. From Edenton to Franklin, Halifax to Charlotte, North Carolina played an integral role in our country's ride toward independence. That patriotism is still visible across our land. We follow the footsteps and hoofprints of the patriots who led the way. But first up is the welcome message entitled Long May It Wave, by the editor, Elizabeth Hudson. Before we learned our times tables or how to make a proper cursive capital Q, we learned the Pledge of Allegiance. 20 of us first graders in saddle shoes and plaid jumpers standing at attention before the American flag in the corner of our classroom. 1976, the year of the bicentennial. We didn't yet know all the states. We couldn't yet tell time, but we knew how to go quiet. We knew how to press our palms flat against our hearts, how to keep our eyes on the flag and recite the words together. Years later, I'd swing into the high school parking lot, racing the bell, and I'd notice the flag above the brick facade as I rushed out, a constant on its pole. At baseball games at McCrary Park, when the loudspeaker crackled and the first notes of the national anthem rose tinny over the field, a hush moved through the bleachers. Ball caps came off. Everyone stood. No one told us to stop talking. We just did. I think about the places across North Carolina where the sight of a flag causes us to pause, to stand still, to look up. At the Carolina Field of Honor in Kernersville, American flags flank the walkway to a soaring granite obelisk. At Chimney Rock State Park, a 475-square-foot flag unfurls from the top of the mountain, as much a landmark as the stone monolith beneath it. Last year on the battleship North Carolina in Wilmington, 250 flags were raised to commemorate the anniversaries of the Marine Corps and the Navy. Red, white, and blue, bright against the warship's gray haze. I see flags lifting along the waterfront in Beaufort, New Bern, and Southport, fabric seeming to rise and fall with the tides. In Ashboro, Shelby, and Roxboro, flags lean from porch posts, family heirlooms catching the first light. Outside high school stadiums on Friday nights, beside Little League fields, in front of courthouses with columns and clock towers, at car dealerships and feed and seed stores and church cemeteries set amid old oaks and pines. I see small flags poking up from the ground beside gravestones. From my home in Greensboro, the Guilford Courthouse National Military Park is not far away. In the spring, when the dogwoods begin to bloom and the light lingers longer in the afternoon, I walk those quiet paths and try to listen for the sounds that once split this air. The thunder of guns and horse hooves, the shouts and scrambling of men. The landscape where I often spot deer and listen for birdsong looks gentle now. It was not always so. 250 years is a long stretch of road, a long measure of time, longer than the Blue Ridge Parkway as it curves past overlook after overlook, longer than any summer we were sure would last forever. This state has watched mills rise and shutter, rivers flood and recede. We've heard tobacco warehouses ring out with the auctioneer's chants and then fall silent. Textiles have given way to tech, fields turn to factories, factories to research parks. And still, at a ball game, at a memorial, in a classroom somewhere, we raise our hands to our hearts. We were children when we first spoke those words, but here we are, 250 years on, still rising to our feet, still looking up, still believing that this red clay, salt air, mountain-shadowed state, one patch in a field of 50, is worth our full attention, our full gratitude, our full devotion. And now we'll switch gears and I'll take you on a descriptive journey through this month's photo essay entitled A Feast for the Eyes. In art class, we learn to notice texture, form, color, and light. On the plate, those same techniques guide chefs, bakers, and makers across North Carolina, turning ingredients into compositions meant to be admired before they are savored. The first picture, the opening picture, is about Edelweiss Pastry Boutique in Highlands, which opened in 2023. It focuses on the art of careful craftsmanship over production baking. When in creations like a cracked egg cake with sugar magnolias, and it... Oh, if I didn't know it better, I would think it was real flowers and an egg and eggs in a nest. But it's a cake, and the top of it is cracked. Looks like an egg and cracked. It's sort of in pale, pinky taupe color. And coming out, there's four eggs inside this cracked eggshell. Four smaller eggs, and then you've got these super realistic looking sugar magnolia flowers that are in shades of pale green, off-white, and sort of the peachy, taupey color of the cracked egg in which it lies. Detail. This is about Edelweiss Pastry Boutique in Highlands. Oksana Shalikova, spring's creations tell the season's story. A white chocolate shell holds the promise of an apricot yolk, quotes, beneath a white chocolate and mascarpone mousse. A sleepy, sculpted chocolate black bear emerges from his den, and a cracked egg showcases a full nest and handcrafted sugar magnolias in bloom, and that's what I just described to you. Hope, awakening, and rebirth at Edelweiss Pastry Boutique. Spring is so close, you can taste it. And the bear that is mentioned in the text is a sculpted chocolate black bear, and it looks like a sculpture resting on a wooden platform, the live edge wood platform. It looks realistic. It looks like a sculpture. I wouldn't have no idea that it was chocolate. Very realistic looking. Any little green moss on what appear to be stones. On the facing page are individual eggs on a nest of chocolate bark, I suppose, and with a little leaf on top of each one and a little side bit of a marshmallow daisy. Just fabulous. Then there's composition. This is about Herons in Cary, North Carolina. Like many masterpieces, dishes at Herons often begin with a sketch. Executive chef Stephen Green's drawings help his team visualize creations to be made from their culinary garden, One Oak Farm. We let the colors of the season paint the plates, Green says. And it shows one of his creation, one of his drawings, and then shows the final product in real life. And it's got a garnish of a flowering basil and petite basil, and then a persimmon puree, as indicated in the drawing, Salanova lettuce from One Oak, dressed with fresh yuzu and hazelnut oil, sliced and composed Fuji persimmon, pointing to that, and North Carolina crab dressed with hazelnut and yuzu vin, dried persimmon basil. And then that's the picture of it that he's drawn, and then we see the actual photograph of the leaves of lettuce. It looks like it perhaps is romaine or endive, and it's sticking up from the salad bowl, and persimmon, the dried persimmon, is sort of molded into a, into a flourish, if you will. From paper to palate, Green's dishes include a hoisin glazed sea scallop with miso passion fruit sauce, pumpkin and carrot, and a crab salad that I just described to you, with persimmons, toasted hazelnuts, and a yuzu hazelnut dressing. And so, very colorful. There's the pickled onions, and there's edible flowers and some basil snippets on the scallop itself. And then there's a little triangle of roasted seared pumpkin. And there's little tiny little farm carrots, little baby carrots, fat baby carrots, and the scallop itself with the hoisin glaze. The next part of composition is the scale. Art term is scale. Inside Lindsay Diebler's elaborate homes, you'll find functional living spaces with printed wallpaper, window treatments made from edible fabric, and bookshelves filled with classic titles. As a trained interior designer, the gingerbread artist, and winner of Gingerbread Land on Magnolia Network and Food Network, assembles edible abodes that are, apart from their size, move-in ready. It took more than 400 hours for her and her partner, Wendy Pryor, to build The Gift of Stories, a 49-pound, 2-foot-tall castle. The pair hides a blue ribbon in each creation and challenges viewers to spot the ribbon. And there's the castle itself has a blue and brown and just shades of blue and I guess purple, really. It's not really brown, it's more of a purple or eggplant tiled roof, and then there's a turret with a red roof and or earth tone. It's earth root, and there's a variety of, I think there's the thing it's supposed to mean, the snippets from the stories, the castle itself. So there's like Rapunzel with her blonde hair trailing out. There's Sleeping Beauty in a room at the top. And there's Little Red Riding Hood with her apple. And all with a nice glaze over it, making them very shiny. And trees with apples on them, leaves and turrets, and just fabulous. The next art term is balance. Seabird in Wilmington. At first glance, the Seabird Seafood Tower is a sculptural feast, but as diners work their way down from Topsail Sound and Sneed's Ferry oysters to the figure eight blue crab and the beet pickled deviled egg topped with caviar produced in Marshallburg, the tower becomes a trophy championing the possibilities that await North Carolina waters. Customers celebrating special occasions are sometimes gifted an origami seabird made by Sarah Dodson, a front-of-the-house manager. When you eat certain foods, you feel like you're being taken care of, says Dean Neff, Seabird's chef and co-owner. Beautifully shucked oysters are one of those foods. Well, we have a picture of this seafood, the Seabird Seafood Tower, and the top has raw oysters and lemon wedges, and there's some ice in that as well that you can see. And then the next layer down is a couple of little jars with, I'm assuming, condiments or chutneys and so forth. There's blue crab stuffed inside a blue crab shell. There's some peppers. There's crackers, and there's some crab claws clutching some lemon slices. And at the bottom, you have more crackers and just everything's brightly colored. And I see the deviled eggs with the caviar listed. But a three-layered tower of sumptuousness. The next artistic term is pattern. This is spotlighting the spot at Nag's Head. Nikki Dean, Sean Dean, and Leanne Jones, co-owners of the spot, discovered the antioxidant-rich acai blend while traveling with their team for Secret Spot Surf Shop, owned by Nikki and Leanne. In 2015, the trio opened the Outer Banks' first acai shop next door for customers craving a fresh and fanciful adorned treat. And we have three different bowls, and one is topped with chocolate, a broken up chocolate, shell of chocolate, dark chocolate. It looks like there's blueberries, strawberries, pineapples, and some dollops of chocolate ganache and some granola. And another bowl looks like chocolate and peanut butter and banana. And the third bowl shows coconut, pineapple, kiwi, and fresh strawberries and blueberries. Very colorful. The next artistic term is symmetry. Atop each board designed at her charcuterie shop in Sunset Beach, Lindsay Ransom plays with balance and contrast. A jammy spread paired with a sharp cheese, delicately folded pepperoni stacked beside cornichon, and tart apple crescents tucked up to signature truffles, a combination of soft cheeses rolled in crisp pistachios. Ransom was raised in her parents' Virginia Beach Inn, where gathering around food became a family tradition. And her charcuterie boards look like they have a mix of sweet and savory. There's tomato and fresh mozzarella. There are little half-opened pods of peas, raw peas. There's some mustards and some croissants and cracker, crispy crackers, and little cornichon, little pickles, all sweet pickles. Different types of cheeses and fruits, and the cheese that's rolled into crushed pistachios. Just very colorful, and again, a feast for the eyes. Trying to describe it as best I can for you. There's also a fresh honeycomb on one side and on the sideboard, and then there's a fresh French bread sliced up, ready to be nibbled. Another art term is palette. The culinary gardener is our focus, and that's in Weaverville. From his 2.5-acre canvas of Appalachian earth, Evan Chinder conjures works of art to support Asheville's food scene. Of the 30 or so crops the culinary gardener grows for restaurants like Limosa, The Admiral, and Chai Pani, he finds tubers hold the most subtle beauty. Even a yellow potato looks bright in a dark earth. Chinder, who studied food culture and sustainable agriculture, supplies 18 Western North Carolina restaurants with meticulously cared for produce. And we have little baby beets and beet greens and shallots, fresh lettuces, some fresh tomatoes and cherry tomatoes and slicing tomatoes, endive, romaine lettuce. All sorts of things, making a colorful display there. That's from the earth, palette based upon the earth. And then there's the ocean on the other side. Crystal Coast Boil and Roast from Swansboro. Come summertime, boil master Brad Watson, his wife Kim, and daughter Sarah Grace serve at least one on-site shrimp boil or oyster roast each day. The visual smorgasbords of seafood, fresh from nearby trawlers, feature Brad's signature seasoning blend and citrus touch, orange for sweetness and a squeeze of lemon to enhance all that's good in our ocean. The Crystal Coast Boil and Roast lays out its seafood spread at homes and events from Swansboro to the Crystal Coast and down east. And it is a display for sure. There's a little miniature half corn cobs. There's shrimp. There's cream crab legs. There's sausage. There's potatoes. There's mussels. And all sorts of delights from the ocean. Then there's color theory, another art term. A science background helped Cooper formulate dough dust, a colored powder that doesn't fade at high temperatures. Her nights and weekends are dedicated to sourdough, and as of 2024, to her daughter, Ava. Annie Cooper is a bread artist located in Raleigh, and she has just 15 minutes to shape, color, and score a sourdough bowl before she drops it into a steaming Dutch oven. The colors could fade, the scores could warp, and the bread might not rise, but the chance to see perfection when she lifts the lid keeps Cooper committed. So we have a variety of her bread bowls with the different things scored into it. You've got a ladybug, so the middle of the bread bowl was scored horizontally, and you have, and she's got colored red wings and little black dots and a little face on the top. She's got a bumblebee in another one. It's a bread bowl that's not scored, but it has alternating gold and black stripes that she's put on there. She's got a chick coming out of an egg, and she's scored, of course, the bread so that it would give a little look of a cracked eggshell and a little top knot of a chick coming out. And then there's some flowers with scores all around the side and the middle of each petal to help those to rise and give it a 3D effect. And she's got a fantastic butterfly that is cut into the scored into the bread dough to cause it, the wings to elevate as the bread bakes. And a bright, all of her colors are just bright. And then she's got a sort of a design or a work of art, actually, in a focaccia dough that she's got slices of onions that actually appear to be flowers. And she's got other edible flowers placed in there and some greenery along the way, little slices of tomato that make this savory work of art, edible art, look fantastic. Then you have the lighting aspect of art, and this is focused on the chocolate fetish out of Asheville. Since 1986, warm lights have illuminated the creations of the chocolate fetish. Beneath the glass, fresh truffles shine like gems in a jewelry shop, the light catching on gold-dusted exteriors and painterly accents that hint at the decadent ganache inside. To curate their own tasty gallery, customers pick from options like red old-fashioned truffles and peach bellinis with ombre shells of orange, yellow, and white. And we have pictures of all of these, and some of the shapes are different. Pardon me. Some of the shapes are different, with some hard edges and others are rounded. They're scored with, or they're dusted with gold flecks, and they have signature swirls on top. Some are just simply colored, but they have no swirls on top. We see some reds and yellows and the ombre colors that we're talking about, which go from peach to cream to yellow to red. And there's some with sprinkles on them that may be like a turbinado sugar, it looks perhaps, or some other sort of crystal garnish. Very, very nice. With the time that we have left, I need to skip away from the main theme articles because all of those are rather long, and I'll skip down into one of the new columns, and it's entitled A Taste of Our State, Carolina Cured. A Taste of Our State is about savoring North Carolina through the flavors of home. Carolina Cured. In the South, we happened upon fatback in our stores and well-seasoned side dishes. This month, fatback finds its way, finally, into our columnist's kitchen. At the risk of losing my street cred as a cook born and raised in North Carolina, I confess that I've never bought a hunk of fatback, at least not outright. This doesn't mean I can't talk a reasonable fatback game. I understand that it's the firm, fatty layer from a pig's back, prized in traditional Southern cooking. This type of pure, rich fat adds moisture and flavor to dishes and makes lean or meager meals more filling and satisfying. Fatback can be fried crisp for snacking and rendered to make lard. It's a close cousin to side meat, salt pork, and streakaline, which I believe would be a perfect name for a quick, rangy hunting dog, by the way. Fatback is the backbone of many homegrown Southern recipes, rooted in an elemental need for fat in cooking and seasoning. Though we claim fatback, every culture in the world cooks with the fat of their land, the type easiest to find, afford, and store. For generations, families who had no source of vegetable fat or who had to produce everything they ate turned to pigs. It was a logical choice. Much of a pig is edible, yielding cuts that keep well, making pork the optimal choice for smoking, salting, and curing. Long after pork fat was no longer the only choice, it remained a preferred one. I've eaten fat back in ways both expected and not. Last year, I went to Robeson County to feast on Lumbee-style collard sandwiches. Nestled between the two cornbread fritters was a mound of tender collards, a spoonful of zippy chow chow, and two crisp, golden brown crescents of fried fatback. The effect was not unlike tucking crunchy tater chips into a sandwich. I've enjoyed vegetables simmered with fatback that added a shimmering gloss. The best baked beans I ever tasted relied on a hunk of salt pork in the bottom of a clay pot. Speaking of beans, I can neither overlook nor undersell the deliciousness of a can of pork and beans popped open on a fishing or camping trip. We can rest assured that requisite bits of pork fat will bob among our beans. Fatback also freckles many cured and fresh sausages, including the pepperonis on our pizza. Funny how much fatback we enjoy, unaware. My most curious encounter with fatback was rooted in the cuisine of Italy, a land of flowing olive oil, yet where many cooks embrace the flavor traditions of using pork fat in certain dishes, just like us Southerners. A charming white-haired man named Armando, famous for curing his own meats, offered his guests a platter of perfect shrimp draped with gossamer strips of lardo, a type of fancy Italian fatback cured with herbs and spices. With a twinkle in his eye, he watched me take my first bite, waiting for me to fall in love with lardo for sure, and possibly with him. We can find fatback in most groceries, but my favorite places to look for seasoning meats is in a good country store. For years, I drove my daughter deep into Chatham County to take weekly music lessons. We passed a cinder block store that sported a hand-painted sign out front that proclaimed, "We sell everything from fatback to tofu." I'm sorry I never bought any of their fatback, but to be fair, I never stopped for the tofu either. I reckon the moral of this story is that for those of us who love delicious home-cooked food graced with pork fat, yet haven't picked up any at the store, it's never too late to make a U-turn. And here's a fat fact for you. There are a number of different types of seasoning meats that are labeled as, quote, fatback. Ideally, the one you find is fresh and either unsalted or lightly cured. If the fatback you're using is coated in gritty salt, rinse it thoroughly under cool water and blot it dry before using it for cooking. Well, that sound says that we have reached the end of our time together. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be joining us next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. Again, that's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.